Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Yeah, and remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc., that's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C, and PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. Go to the website, click on the different tabs. Even on the homepage, there's a lot of information, a breakdown, you know, small breakdowns of the organization, the mission, the vision, the goals, what we have been waiting for, and break down some things, give you some numbers, percentages, and all those things. And that's just the first page. There's a whole lot of information. So make sure you go through the whole website, because PAX Inc. is an organization that's created for you. It's a football organization for us, by us. Just make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Patrick, and all of the other hosts that we have on our network. Make sure you tune in to the Enigma SEP Hour every Friday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right? And it's right here on the Freedom Train Network, as well as the Enigma September YouTube channel. And it'll be live from there. That way you can get the visual from both places. But, you know, we at www.freedomtrainradio.com. And remember, there's a Lessons from the Screen Patreon page, as well as a Fix Sports Podcast Patreon page. Hey, Pat, tell them about that Lessons from the Screen Patreon page.
Basically, you know, if you want to support Lessons from the Screen, you can go to www.patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. / LFTS, Lessons from the Screen. And every time I drop a show, I also drop it on the Patreon page. So if you want to support us, if you want to support Patreon or Lessons from the Screen, you can go over there and you can choose to donate as little as or give as little as $1 a month to sponsor the show, or you can choose to donate or give as little as $1 per show that drops, and that's 2 shows a week. So that'd be $2 a week. So, you know, that it's a way for you to help us grow by giving us the resources to expand our equipment, or giving us the resources to potentially develop the financial freedom required to travel places, or to spend more time doing research and not worry about other things that are going on in life. Various other things. So that's the Patreon for Lessons for the Screen. And did I just cover the one from the Fix as well?
Well, you pretty much gave the breakdown of why we do the Patreon. So, you know, you got Lessons from the Screen, and mine is patreon.com/thefix. So we like you said, we need your support. We can't do this without you. We create this for you, but we do need your support to continue and get better, to be able to bring a better product to you. Because this whole platform that we created here with the Freedom Train is to be able to connect our community to resources and people who can help enhance and uplift our community. So we definitely need your support. But, you know, before we get deep down in the show, man, what's been going on with you, Pat? We ain't talked in a week. So what's been going on, man? I know we talked, but we ain't talked, you know what I'm saying?
Not much, man. I just been, you know, living the marriage life, pretending to be somebody daddy. Still working on the books, getting those geared up. I heard about your book getting dropped on February 16th.
February 16th. Yeah, on the show, The Giants, Volume 3, South America. I'm getting my continents mixed up, but South America is available February 16th. If you go to ontheshouldersone.com, you can actually learn more about the book, and you can actually pre-order it now. So, you know, do that.
So I'm trying to make sure that my books are ready when your book comes out, because we supposed to do that speaking tour. Well, you know, we travel the country, hitting up college campuses and anywhere else that'll have us, and we speak to the people, and we sell our books in the back.
There you go. We got a lot of information to give y'all too, man. From Black liberation. No, it's all encompassing Black liberation, but from different standpoints. Because my angles are, you know, the African history. And we all have history, but I'm more, you know, my lane is the historian lane. And then from the healthy relationship point, the domestic sexual violence prevention, HIV AIDS prevention, those are the lanes that I come from. So tell them about the lanes that you come from, Pat.
Well, these two books, the first one is on the Black family. So it's a culture book with heavy ties into the family. And the various aspects of gender roles and gender relationships in the community and how they've changed and how they've been used against us and how we can turn them into things that can be used to our advantage. And the other book is a tactical book, Black Tactics for the Revolution. And it's just about giving people different ideas and different ways to think about fighting for the things that we're trying to fight for. So, you know, different ways of utilizing tactics, different things, different kinds of understandings for some of the tactics that we use, you know, different ways of thinking about concepts and terms like power and leverage and things of that nature. So it's very much a strategy book. Now, I will be clear, I'm not giving you any strategies in that book, because your strategies are largely going to be determined by your location and what you have available to you in your situation. But the book does give you in-depth analysis of various tactics that we utilize today and that have been used historically, and different ways and lessons that we can learn from those, and ways that you can use those same tactics to be more effective in building your strategies. So that's what those two books are about. But typically speaking, my lane is more statistics, more numbers, you know, more understanding the modern situation, the modern scenario, culture, and things of that nature. So in that, you know, Joe hit you over the head with the history lessons, because he by far knows more about these historical figures. And then I bring it back to modern society and try to interpret those things for you, so that you can incorporate them into what you're doing today.
There you go. I got like a PhD in sociology. you know what I'm saying? Just by being out in the world and just doing the things that I've been doing, and I've become more comfortable because I've been able to fully conceptualize how I want to present myself and how I want to be able to present my information as far as my historical information, plus my healthy relationship, sexual domestic violence, as well as the HIV AIDS prevention. Because, you know, I've been struggling for a minute, how do I present all this stuff? But then as I got older and I started really understanding how white supremacy works. And then after the Independence Day Project came out and being able to look at the 9 areas of human activity, then I realized how my information affects those 9 areas of human activity. It became more clear for me, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, man. But you know, we're saying all this to y'all just to let y'all know we out here. So you all, if you want to book us at any time, you can email joe@freedomtrainradio.com or patrick@freedomtrainradio.com, and you know, you can book us. We come out, we do talks, lectures, all those things. And we'll get you right. We'll get you right.
Mm-hmm.
So So last week we talked about climate change. And
oh, hey,
I'm gonna be
real quick.
Go ahead.
I just wanna make it clear, y'all don't have to wait till February if y'all wanna book us.
Yeah, we available year round. Yeah, don't just wait to February. Because, you know, remember, Black people are Black year round too. Remember that. I think they forget sometimes. But like I say, last week we talked about climate change, and we gave a overview and a kind of our thoughts and a kind of a warm-up of what climate change is and how it affects us overall from a broad perspective. But today we have, what's the name of this report?
The National Climate Assessment.
So this is the fourth National Climate Assessment.
Right.
And these things are supposed to come out every 4 years, right?
They're supposed to.
Okay, because I know I was listening to your show earlier, and it was talking about, you were saying how these reports come out every 4 years. So I started counting, because I'm like, because you said the first one came out in 2004?
First one came out in 2000.
Okay, 2000, right. So I started counting. I'm like, I know math ain't my best subject, but if he's supposed to come out every 4 years and it's 2018, yeah, that's not CP time, that's past CP time.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. This is actually the first report that's come out on time. The first one came out, the law was passed in 94, and then
right.
The first report didn't come out until 2000, and then the next one didn't come out until 2009. And then you had one come out in 2014. So finally, they on track with this one that came out in 2017/2018.
Right. And so this report helps us go a little deeper into what climate change is and how it's truly affecting the globe. And let me say this. It seems like the severity of the effects of climate change is happening in Antarctica, in the Arctic, especially, but more so Antarctica, right? And you may be saying that, okay, the hell that got to do with me? I'm in Alabama. I'm in California. I'm in Wisconsin. I'm in Florida. I'm in Miami. I'm in Key West. You know, I'm in South Africa, something like that. But you have to understand how important it is for the Arctic and those land masses of ice to not be affected the way that they are being affected by climate change, because I think according to the report that the temperature is rising maybe 1 to 2 degrees a year, correct? Am I wrong?
In the Arctic, the temperature is rising. I know the temperature is rising twice as fast as it is everywhere else, but I can't remember
right.
the exact degree. But
right,
the severity of it. Yeah, you're right.
Right, but it's going to sustain the bulk of the damage from global warming. Now, the Earth is getting hotter. Like we said last night, it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. So, two of the main reasons that it's getting hotter is greenhouse gases and CO2 levels, rising CO2 levels.
Mm-hmm.
And this report is talking about societal effects. So that's where we're going to pick up with this show, societal effects. And it has a series of questions. So we're going to go through the questions, kind of give some information and a breakdown of it, right? So the first question is, how is climate change affecting society? And a quick excerpt, it's saying climate change is altering the world around us in ways that become increasingly evident with each passing decade. Natural and human systems that we rely on are being impacted by more intense precipitation events, rising sea levels, and the warming ocean, and will be impacted by projected increases in frequency of droughts and heat waves over and other extreme weather patterns. So let's start with precipitation. Damn it, let me get more word out. Precipitation, rising sea level, and warming oceans. So From more reference on what we're talking about here, if you go to Patrick's Lessons from the Screen page, last two shows he put out from Thursday and Tuesday are talking about this, so there's more context. So Pat, kind of pick us up with like what they're talking about. How does intense precipitation, rising sea level, and warming ocean, why should we give a damn about that?
Well, we'll start with the more intense precipitation events, and that's basically talking about rain and storms. And for anybody that lives in Tornado Alley or the Hurricane Belt or anywhere along the southeast or the east coast period or the south
right.
and the east,
right.
You should care about the strength of the storms, especially given what we've experienced the last few years with these major, every summer we've had a major storm come through and basically wreck the coast. So, and the Caribbean. So when you're talking about precipitation, you should care about that. You should also care about the intensity, the amount of rain You know, now you're talking about flash flooding or gradual flooding. You're talking about sea level rise. You're talking about all of these different things that affect our ability to move around, our ability to transport things, and our ability to sustain a livable environment in the coast and in wet weather areas. Because you're also talking about, now you're talking about dealing with things that have to do with the natural aquifers that we use to gather water, when you're talking about the water table. So when you're talking about precipitation events and the increased intensity of them, that's pretty major for everybody living in the South and living on the East Coast. And it's also major for those living on the West, because if we're getting more rain on the East Coast, they're getting more droughts over there. It's getting drier, and we're seeing the results of that as well with the fire and things of that nature. So the precipitation events is huge. Rising sea level, you know, that kind of goes in with the precipitation events. You know, the water getting higher, coastal cities, if feeling the effects of that, having to effectively pick up the entire city and move it backwards or build barriers and dams to the encroaching ocean.
Right.
And all of that costs hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars over the next century. So you're talking about major costs to the economy. And a warming ocean, there are a lot of things in the ocean that rely and depend on the ocean being within a narrow range of temperatures.
Right.
And when
My bad. But like you said earlier, like you said in your show, the creatures in the ocean can survive without creatures on land, but creatures on land can't survive without creatures on ocean in the ocean. So we need to think about something like that.
Right.
You know.
And when you think about a good chunk of the oxygen that's been created in the Earth's atmosphere that we need to breathe, a good chunk of that has been created by plant creatures in the ocean.
Right. But also, my bad, not to cut you off, but just add kind of context to that. People look at what we're talking about, like rising CO2 levels, all right? So rising CO2 means less oxygen. So you know how you got folk, what is the Beijing or Shanghai, one of the cities in China where the people walk around with masks and they have to buy air? That's what happens when you have rising levels of not just CO2, but greenhouse gases. But rising CO2 levels means, like I said, less pure air that we are breathing. And that's not good, because the plants that do well in CO2, they're going to do well. But most of the plants that we need to survive don't do well in rising CO2 levels, because the plant life that's existing today isn't the same as it was in like the Jurassic or Triassic ages, when you had elevated CO2 levels. So when you go back and you look at the dinosaur ages, just to break that down a little further, shit was bigger in the dinosaur age because CO2 levels were higher. So CO2 levels are lower now, so things to us for this age are more average size. But we're not going to have that effect. What we're going to have is a dying off of the plant life, the bug life, and the human life, rising CO2 levels, especially the CO2 that's emitted from these industrial things that we keep doing. So it's bad CO2, basically what I'm saying. That's what he's saying as well.
And what we have to keep in mind as well is the air we breathe is a delicate balance of various things that we can breathe in and tolerate without dying. Carbon dioxide is poisonous to us. That's why we breathe it out. But the same way that oxygen is beneficial to us, if we find ourselves in an environment that's too oxygen rich, meaning it has more than 24% oxygen, I believe the number is, we'll die from what effectively is oxygen poisoning. And plants are similar. Everything in the environment requires this delicate balance that's been created over millions and millions of years for survival. And so if the composition of the air changes drastically by the effect of increased CO2 levels or whatever else, all of these artificial chemicals we might be pumping into the air, then now you're looking at the air becoming toxic to the most of the living things on the planet. And that's something we got to remember. It's not like we could just pump out as much CO2 as we want, and because the plants breathe in CO2, they're going to be good. You get to a point where it's just too much CO2.
Right. Right. But now look at this, because like you were talking about rising sea levels and intense precipitation. So think about, all right, let's say y'all like to go to Miami. All you people who like to go to South Beach, right? So rising sea levels means no more South Beach. Mm-hmm. Elevated CO2 levels means when you go to South Beach, you die from acidic water. So rising sea levels means Miami don't exist anymore. There are already, I've seen reports or like studies and predictions 10, 15, 20 years ago that were saying if we don't act right, like most of Florida could be underwater. So like I'm in Florida. I'm two hours away from the water. So for me, when you talk about rising sea levels, that's a true concern. When you talk about acidic water, that's a true concern for me, because we rely on so many springs and seawater for our survival down here in Florida. But even if you're landlocked, you know, I mean, acidic water still is an issue to you, because yes, you may be in a landlocked state, and you might not be that close to the waters, but just because, but remember, not just the ocean, not just the water in the oceans would be affected by the acidity of the CO2 levels. The water you drink, like if you drink like your Zephyr Hills and your Fiji water and your Eternal water, all your alkaline water, those come from aquifers, those come from springs, those come from other places that will be affected by the CO2 levels and the rise in sea levels. And intense rain means flash floods. That means could be more acid rain. All those things it's like Pat said, the balance will be thrown off, because right now you got wildfires tearing up California, but then you also have floods and all these things here, and things are off. So we have to really be proactive and be a part of the solutions in changing what we do societally, because it will affect our economy in a negative way. You know,
I want to make one more point. All three of those points mentioned in this area tie in, because warm water creates storms. The warmth of the water causes the water vapor to rise higher, and then when it condenses into clouds, it releases that latent heat, which warms the air around it, which creates storms, essentially, simplified matter. So now you're having these storms being created by a warming ocean. Now the ocean is bigger because of sea level rise, so that means that there's more time for the storm to continue to gain strength as it moves along. It's not going to hit the land and break down the way it usually would on a coastline. It's going to go further inland because the sea level's risen.
We saw that this year.
Increase the precipitation even more.
We just saw that. We just had a Cat 5 hit Florida's Panhandle coastline. We ain't had that since damn Andrew. Think about it. We ain't had that since Hurricane Andrew, which was in, what, 96? Between 92 and 96?
Yeah, it was a while back.
So think about a Cat 7 hitting land, but land is North Louisiana. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to think about things like that, like all your coastal cities and things. And then when we talk about intense precipitation, the report was talking about how more precipitation in the Arctic rather than snowfall or freezing is harmful to the glaciers. And then if the glaciers melt too fast, a lot of toxins will be released from the glaciers. And that they were talking about, I forgot the exact organism that salmons eat. So if the waters warm up and this organism that the salmons eat, they die off, then the salmons die off, then the bears die off, then all these type of things die off. So it creates chain reactions. So we have these are something that we have to really pay attention to and not just be like, oh man, it don't affect me, because it affects, and then it has a breakdown of the different regions of the United States and island areas. So I'm just real quick, just kind of give you a brief summary of all that. It's talking about, so the impact on Alaska's physical and mental health of rural Alaskans is increasingly challenged by unpredictable weather. The Northern Great Plains flash droughts and extreme heat illustrate sustainability challenges for ranching operations. The Northwest wildfire increases and associated smoke affecting human health, water resources, timber production, fish and wildlife and recreation. For the Midwest, increased heavy rains are leading to more soil erosion and nutrient loss in the Midwestern cropland southeast where we at. Flooding in Louisiana and increased from extreme rainfall. The Southern Great Plains, Hurricane Harvey landfall on the Texas coast in 2017 was one of the costliest natural disasters in history. Think about that. The Southwest, drought in the Colorado River Basin reduced Lake Mead by over half since 2000. So in 18 years, Lake Mead has been reduced by half. Now, what's good about this plan, these breakdowns of the different results and challenges, is they have action plans. And so with these action plans, and we'll put a link to this report in our show notes as well, but the action plans is like each area is developing different things that they have to do. So the Midwest Action Plan, Iowa State developed a program for using prairie strips and farm fields. So the Northwest is cities and states throughout the region are assisting their vulnerability to climate change and making investments to increase infrastructure resilience. The Southeast is the Acadian Planning Commission in Louisiana's pooling hazardous reduction funds. In the Southern Great Plains, the Governor's Commission to Rebuild Texas was created to support economic recovery and rebuilding of infrastructure. Southwest, seven U.S. state governments and U.S. and Mexico federal governments mobilized users to conserve water. For the Northwest, their federal forests have developed adaptation strategies for climate change that include methods to address increasing wildlife. For the Northern Great Plains, they're talking about National Drought Mitigation Center is helping ranchers plan to reduce drought. So there are plans that are being put into action, but we have to look at, all right, what are we doing different? What can we do different? So the next question is, what's the social cost of carbon? So before we break down the question, Pat, can you give them a little breakdown of, I know we talked about it, but can you give them like a further breakdown of the carbon and CO2s and why we need a balance or a minimal level of the CO2 within our atmosphere?
Well, essentially, everything requires a delicate balance, right? And right now, the Earth is made up of, 80% nitrogen or 75% nitrogen, 20% oxygen, and then the rest is like breakdowns of less than a percentage each. And I think carbon dioxide is something like a fifth of a percent or something like that. So the natural state of the atmosphere is to have carbon be a trace gas, really, a trace element, you know, the substance of carbon dioxide is a trace substance. It's there because we breathe it out and the plants need it, but they don't need a lot of it because plants don't have to move around and stuff. So because they're stationary and they don't have very active lives, they don't need a lot of energy, but they do need some. But the world has grown to a place where we have become adapted to a place that is low in carbon dioxide and basically has a middle ground of oxygen and is mostly nitrogen. And nitrogen is largely a inert gas. We can deal with nitrogen. We can, you know, that's not going to kill us. The problem with carbon dioxide is that, without getting too deep into chemistry, basically, like I said earlier, without getting deep in the, without even going into chemistry, but what I said earlier, carbon dioxide is poisonous to humans. That is right. Why you breathe it out. It's a natural reaction to the breathing process, to the way that our bodies use the air coming in to create energy for us. Carbon is a byproduct. Carbon dioxide is a byproduct of that. Plants take right. that carbon dioxide and they yeah, combine but, it with sunlight and water and they release oxygen.
Right, because they need it for photosynthesis.
Right, right, right. So the damage in carbon dioxide getting too high is, like you mentioned earlier, Joe, it's a poison to us. So now you're, but carbon dioxide also reduces or increases the acidity of things that it's around. So now mm-hmm. you're talking about it being poisonous to us, it creating basically acid water, deoxygenating the water, which essentially kills all the life forms in the ocean that also rely on oxygen to exist. So you're talking about a cascading effect when you get too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's not just about the warming component of the temperature getting warmer, but you're also talking about a component of health, of us not being able to live in these environments. So now for the black community particularly, you're talking about, we already have increased rates of asthma and heart disease.
Yeah, we do.
And all of these other things in our community. And there are various different causes for that. But one of the causes is that we tend to live in environments with poor air quality. Yeah. And carbon dioxide rich atmospheres are not just carbon dioxide, but greenhouse gases, those atmospheres that are filled up with greenhouse gases. That air quality is subpar, and you are going to have increased incidences
of respiratory issues,
asthma, heart disease,
yeah.
and other types of allergic reactions to the yeah. things that are going on in the air. And so now you're talking about not even being able to fucking breathe.
Right. So I know you've heard about people who had no allergies and no respiratory issues when they were young. They about 35, 40, and they got allergies and respiratory issues. And, you know, I don't think people really understand how toxic the environment is, because, you know, people are always talking about the meat and all these things that are toxic. But did you say in your show that more people die from polluted air than, like, other stuff?
Yeah. And this is something I've said in a few shows, because I was surprised when I first learned it. There in 2016, there was 6.5 million people died from poor air-related illnesses. In China, you know, you're talking about there was, I want to say at one point in China, there was 4,500 people dying roughly a day from poor air quality. I think that was in 2014 or 2015. There have been years where in certain areas in China, there have been 100,000 people dying a year from poor air quality. So, like, when you look at things like people dying from alcohol-related deaths or people dying from various other things that happen out there, more people are dying from bad air than from a lot of the things that we talk about and say that it's a state of emergency right now. Like, there have been more people that die from bad air than have died from the opioid crisis. But the opioid is a crisis. The opioid thing is a crisis. But nobody's talking about all of the people that are dying from the pollutants in the air. So, and then that brings up the question of, you have to wonder if every time a child is diagnosed with asthma, or every time somebody is diagnosed with heart disease, and I mention those two because those are very prevalent in the community. If every time somebody dies from or gets diagnosed with one of those things, is it really like a genetic thing? Is it an eating thing? Or is it an air thing? You know, you got to ask yourself that question. Are we already experiencing the effects of reduced air quality just by looking at all of the different airborne allergies that we have. You know, you might think, oh man, it's just the dander. I'm just having problems with this, having problems with that. Maybe it's something else. You know, maybe you live in a zone where, you know, somebody has a old school air conditioner or something out, and that those refrigerants have just been getting out in the atmosphere, and you've been breathing those in for 5 or 10 years.
Right.
And now basically, you know, you've been poisoned by it.
Right.
So CO2, and that's one of the big things for me, is more than just it getting warmer. A lot of people are like, yeah, well, I can, it could stand to increase a few degrees. And we know, you should know now that if it increases a few degrees on land, that few degree temperature rise could have dramatic impacts in terms of ocean life. And like we've said 3 or 4 times now, if life in the ocean is disturbed, if the ocean goes barren, the planet dies, essentially.
If, like we said in the last show, hell, if the damn coral reefs died, bitch, shit gonna be fucked up. But it's like, but people, you can't be selfish enough to be like, man, oh hell, 2 to 3 degree rise in the planet's overall heat is cool with me because I like the summertime. That's stupid. Like, you're being selfish and ignorant at that point. I like the summertime too. I don't like to be cold. Anybody tell you I hate being cold? First feeling the cold, I got a hoodie on. But that don't mean I want the earth to get hot for me to feel, to feel good about, you know, being warm. Like, but that means things die individually. Things get threw out of whack. And depending on where you are in the world, in the country, you're going to have different effects. So this is talking about like the social cost of carbon. Like, you, hopefully you are in an area where you even have the means to even deal with the carbon, because it's going to cost money either way. Whether you deal with the carbon or you don't, it's going to cost money in the long term, because money either health wise or money in actually reducing the carbon emission. But there are a lot of people in a lot of places. Not like, that's one thing I did like about this report, is it thought about the people who are underrepresented, the people who don't have voices. So, like, let's say the people on the island where the white man went and got killed trying to spread Jesus. All right. It affects them. They died. Like, a whole tsunamis and typhoons and all those water rise and all those things could affect them. The ocean becomes acidic, or the lakes and stuff that they have on the island becomes acidic, and they have no more, I know some of their food is reduced, but if that same water is still in the environment that is helping with the plants, the people die because their food died, and it becomes, unable to be consumed. Like, we have to really think about that. But even back, let's say industrialized America is going to spend a lot of money on trying to reduce the carbon. America's not going to reduce the money that they spend on war. So that money going to come from somewhere. The money coming from somewhere. And remember, it's going to affect black people the worst. You think Flint is an issue now? Because just think about what's going on in Flint right now. Like, the people right now in Flint and other places around the country still don't have clean water to live. Imagine the whole country being like that. And nothing but millionaires and billionaires got access to clean water. Imagine that.
And here's the issue, right? Because the report also highlighted the fact that reforesting has the effect of cooling.
It can clear up some stuff.
Yeah, clearing up some stuff locally. The problem is the vast majority of black people live in the city. We live in urbanized areas. Even those of us that live out in the country, and which, you know, there. And here's one thing I want to be clear about. There aren't, in terms of a percentage of population, the vast majority, and when I say that, I mean 60% or more, of the black people in America live in some form of city or within 20 or 30 minutes of some city.
Right, right.
So we're not out there in nature where we're going to be buffered by our proximity to a forest. we're not out there where we're going to be, you know, we're going to be able to deal with certain things. Our water is contaminated because the water table in cities has largely been destroyed because of how we build cities. The rain can't get through the ground the way it needs to because we have sidewalks and streets and all these other things that are impervious. The rain can't get through it to get into the ground. And if it can't get through it to get into the ground, it can't get cleansed by the soil. You don't have a water table. Those natural aquifers, they begin to be depleted. You have all of these issues, and we predominantly live in cities which which have bad air to begin with because all of the industrialization is in the cities. So
right.
When this thing hits the fan, not only are we going to be negatively impacted because we're impoverished, but we're also going to be disproportionately negatively impacted because we reside in areas of the city that are already experiencing poor air quality. Our air quality shouldn't get any lower, but it's going to. So you got to consider that too. Healthcare costs, if you're worried about your healthcare costs now, wait until
it's going to go up.
Bad. It's going to get stupid.
Everything is going to increase.
Transportation, your electric bill, food at the supermarket. Everything is going to get more expensive in addition to your healthcare costs. And it's bad enough to struggle through life when you got all these social barriers and economic barriers in place, but now you don't even have your health. What are you going to do with that?
Right. Right. And remember, we're just talking about CO2. We ain't even really gotten to greenhouse gas. So we got we have a lot of challenges. Like I was reading in one part where it was talking about, maybe using, creating or building something that could decrease the intensity of the sun, because the heat of the sun is also helping to, and it's natural though, but it's still helping to increase the temperature of the earth and everything. So building something, but what are the long-term effects of that? Trying to beam the sun back to something. When you still got this high CO2 and greenhouse gases, would that be affected by the sun, and how would that affect plant life and other stuff that's used to getting a certain, even though the clouds are out, it's still there. So how would that affect everything? Yeah. So we have to really be able to look at everything from a 360-degree viewpoint, that it's not just some fly-by-night stuff.
Yeah, it's a big, because that one of the questions they asked was, can geoengineering be used to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere or otherwise reverse global warming? And that's the area you're talking about, where they talked about some of the things that have been suggested, such as building some sort of planetary shield that could prevent sunlight from reaching the Earth. But, the problem with that one is the resources that it would require to even build something of that magnitude. The other thing is that's still like stopping the planet from getting warmer still doesn't fix some of the toxicity,
right.
Some of the toxic issues that we'll face if we fill the atmosphere up with greenhouse gases. So I personally don't think that that's even viable, but it does speak to the fact that not just with this, but in general, we have to be talking about long-term, full 360 solutions to problems, the same way we talked about when you and I talked about prison reform. We can't just go with these snap solutions, things that sound good. You gotta really sit back and think things through. In Paris right now, Prime Minister or the President Macron just raised the gas tax on the people in Paris, on the people in France, and they rebelled on his ass. They're going through massive protests right now.
I heard about that. Because
of what he did, and there are a number of problems with what he did. Now on his face value, it's like, yeah, well, need a gas tax to offset carbon emissions, this, that, and the third. But then when you start to dig into what he did and will it actually change anything, You know, these people got a right to be upset, and what he did isn't necessarily going to fix anything. So you just got to think more deeply about what's going on and how we can solve it. But it starts with conversations like this one.
Straight up. So moving forward in the report, it talks about what are climate change mitigation, adaptation, and resilience. And this is in the report where it starts to talk about action plans to help and improve the environment, reduce CO2, reduce carbon, and slow down the accelerated global warming that has been accelerated by the industries that humans have produced. Humans are fucking up the earth, right? No matter what Donald Trump tells you, and I know some stupid people out there who believe him, but it's too much information to disprove what he's saying. So mitigation, adaptation, and resilience, right? So mitigation refers to actions that reduce the amount and speed of future climate change by reducing emissions of greenhouse gases or removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Adaptation refers to adjustments in natural human systems in response to a new or changing environment that exploit beneficial opportunities or moderate negative effects. Thus, adaptation is closely related to resilience, which is the capacity to prevent, withstand, respond to, and recover from a disruption with minimum damage to social well-being, the economy, and the environment. So these are things that are being put into place right now. So this is why I might have to be mitigation, adaptation, and resilience. But resilience is something that's cool. We need to be focused more on mitigation. How the hell do we assist everybody who's already on board with helping to clean up the earth, clean up the climate, and all these things here? We have to be willing to give up some of our comforts or change or alter some of our comforts. And the way we live, honest to God, the way we live and the way we've been taught to live now these new days is killing the earth. We're not in harmony with the earth the way we live. And so that's why we are where we are. Within the last 18 years, we've done significant damage. Within the last 30 years, we've done significant damage. I'm looking for it now. There's a graph or a picture that they show the Arctic shelf. And they show the Arctic shelf in 1984. Then they show the Arctic shelf again in like 2016, I believe. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, 1984. September 84, and 84 was a great year. I was born in 84. And then 2016. So in 84, you had almost 2 million of perennial sea ice area of the sea ice area covered, like the sea ice covered that area, like almost 2 million kilometers. So it's a huge space. But then now, it's literally below 0.5. So it's like within 32 years, we've had a significant reduction in the ice shelf. And look, we harping on the Arctic, what happens in the Arctic, because the shit is real, man. This ain't no bullshit. This is not no like. Well, it don't matter. I don't live in the Arctic anyway. Hey, man, the Eskimos die, you die. Polar bears die, you die. Like, everything on Earth is connected. Go back to the damn, what that movie, Avatar? Like, hey, man, look, everything is connected. You have to really believe that. And seals die, you die. All these things are real. So it's like when we're talking about now, mitigation is something that we need to really, 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 really harp on, mitigation. And then we know adaptation and resilience are two things that are in place if need be. But in my opinion, I think we should focus on mitigation. What are your opinions, Pat?
I agree, absolutely. I think we need to be focused on mitigation. Honestly, I feel like adaptation and resilience require a sort of acceptance that things are just fucked up and they just gonna be fucked up. And I understand that we need to be adaptive. being able to adapt is always necessary, that flexibility. So we, you know, I'm not saying we need to ignore that. I mean, we need to be able to bounce back from the occasion, from, you know, a superstorm if it does hit. So resilience is important as well. But I think mitigation is where the bulk of the work needs to be done. We need to groom our kids to grow up to be environmental scientists, to be chemists, to be physicists, to be all of those different types of scientists that are going to have a firm grasp of what's going on an atomic level. We need some of them Jetson-like machines that can rearrange atoms and make anything out of anything. We could use one of those right now that could suck all of the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and all of these other greenhouse gases, suck them out of the atmosphere in bulk. Because we can do it in limited scope. We just can't do it in a big enough scope to actually have an impact. So we need our kids to create these things that can do these things on a large scale and turn that CO2 into something more beneficial. You know, turn it into something more useful. I don't know, turn it into freaking coal or graphite and breathable oxygen. I don't know. Turn it into something. But we definitely need to be focused on mitigation. And as individuals, I think we need to be focused on things that we can do, like you said, things that we can do to reduce the speed of climate change, the speed of, you know, reduce how fast things are happening. So you need to adapt to what's happening now, of course, so that means those of us that live in the storm areas, we need to start talking about storm planning and extreme weather plans. We need to have all of those things in place. Power goes out, house gets flooded, car gets flooded. You know, we need to have all those things in place. But we also need to, you know, be walking places more, not running the AC all of the damn time. Turn the goddamn lights out when you ain't using them. You know, stop taking 85-hour showers. You know what I'm saying? Just little things like that could make a big difference if everybody does them.
Yeah, yeah, true. And when I think about it, I try to get in and get out in the shower and be quicker. Well, when I brush my teeth, turn the water off, not just letting the water run and stuff like that. I try to think about that, but it's like we've been trained, so we're spoiled here in America.
We are.
Because it's like, man, when I hear people talk about they too good to eat at Applebee's and Chili's, and I just think about, man, it's people in this city who would die for a chance to eat at Applebee's and Chili's. When you see people just waste water.
Yeah.
Like, little kids just waste water. Grown-ups just waste. You want to see some wasteful shit? Throw a party.
Yeah.
But it's just like we've been socialized to not give a damn about the environment. We are enemies to our own environment. That's how we've been socialized. So I think we can atone by becoming knowledgeable and aware of what's going on and what we're doing to our environment. Because the next question is talking about, is time important in climate mitigation? And that answer is yes. It says the choices made today largely determine what impacts may occur in the future. So we may not see real effects in our lifetime. Our kids may not see real effects in their lifetime, but our grandkids will see real effects in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And so, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, to go back to your other point, I think we've kind of been groomed to believe that everything is so plentiful.
Yeah.
And that was true before the Industrial Revolution and advances in technology, you know, inspired and sustained a major population boom. Back when there was only 200-300 million people on the planet, everything was plentiful. But now there's 6 billion of us, roughly. You know, like there's the planet can only sustain so much before you have to begin to cut back so that other people can have. I talked about that in the show I did on the drought in Johannesburg, where they were counting down until the city had no water. And you know, they had rationed the water out to such an extent that The people were only allowed, I want to say it was like 20 or 25 gallons of water a day, and they were reduced to taking less than 5 minute long showers. Now, and so when you don't think about it until, like, I went in the shower the other day and tried to take what I was reading in the article. They said a standard shower for some of the people are as little as 2.5 minutes. I went in the shower that same day and tried to take a 2.5 minute shower. Are you kidding me? And what? Not even being, and I had the benefit of still being able to use unlimited water. I was just going to get out at 2.5 minutes. Now, then when you add into that a lot of these people, they're bathing with gallon jugs of water, pouring them over themselves, and then reusing that water for some, right, and then reusing that water again. So when you start talking about the ways that people are living in various parts of the world that are experiencing extreme droughts or other types of extreme weather, it gets to be stupid here. And carbon dioxide, like you said, can exist. The report says this. It can exist in the atmosphere for a century or more. So the gas you put out of your car when you go drive to work tomorrow, not saying nobody shouldn't drive to work. You should most definitely drive to work if your job is a long way away. But I'm just saying the carbon dioxide and things that come out of your car tomorrow are going to be fucking up your grandkids when they grow up.
Yep. Yep. I mean, you have to think about it. So, you know, shout out to the people who are, or who can afford to. I know everybody can't afford to have electric cars, but actually you can if you get your little Prius. You know, if you're down with having little ugly cars, but then
yeah,
a lot of the, you know, a lot of the designer electric cars cost a little more money, so it's gonna. I mean, you know, a lot of them electric cars look. They look like little nut sacks, man.
You can get a Toyota hybrid.
Toyota coming through with some stuff, but you know, for the, you know, like I went to the grocery store last weekend, I believe, and dude sent a little ugly little yellow Prius, and it tripped me out because he cut the car on, but it ain't make no noise. And I was like, "It's." He was looking at me like he was ready to back out, and I'm like, "You ain't even cut your car on." But now they hit me. Now he cut his car on. It just sounded like that. Okay, all right, you got me.
They quite like I had a chance to ride. A buddy of mine has an associate of mine has a totally electric car, but he got one of them Teslas, so it ain't ugly. But that also show you what kind of funds, or at least what kind of credit he got. But it is quiet. Those cars are quiet. They're very quiet. I didn't realize they were as quiet as they were until we were stopped at a light. And I was like, yo, is the car on? And, you know, because it didn't feel like being in a gas car.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Man, I mean, there are a lot of different things that we can do on our end and changing the way we live. We don't have to be so demanding, so greedy. Like greed, a lot of people we won't admit how greedy we are, but a lot of people are greedy when it comes to resources. And like you say, overall global resources are more of a scarcity than they used to be. Now there's enough to go around. The people aren't greedy though.
There absolutely is, right.
So if you, me, everybody agree to not be greedy and we work together, then we can do a lot of things. But, you know, you have to get over our horrible human tendencies.
Right, because, you know, like a great analogy, it's not even an analogy, but a great truth, in my opinion. There's enough land and resources for everybody on the planet to have their own house. You know, there's enough land and resources for everybody on the planet to have their own 2,000 square foot home.
Yeah.
But there's not enough land and resources for everybody to have their own 14,000 square foot, $3.5 million mansion. So,
well, you know,
you gotta weigh the pros and the cons. Do you want a goddamn stadium as a house at the cost of maybe 30 or 40 other people? Not, because essentially that's what's happening. It's not like you buying your $80 million bazillion home ain't hurting nobody. It absolutely is, if you, because everything's connected. If you think about the way that that purchase impacts the economy, and the way that that purchase drives resources, and the way that that purchase affects labor, it absolutely affects everybody else. And I'm not saying that to make nobody feel bad about buying an $80 bazillion house. If you want a nice home, by all means, get a nice home. I'm just saying, there's enough to go around for people if people understand, you know, that there isn't enough for everybody to have a goddamn 22,000 square foot mansion. There isn't enough resources or money or anything like that for everybody to have that. There's plenty of resources for everybody to have a decent home with a decent yard and have quality meals.
There you go. I mean, it is. I mean, the earth has enough resources for everybody. We can't be greedy, like we're saying, but we're not going to beat that point into the ground. And we already talked about more people being vulnerable. We already talked about economics and climate change. We already talked about slowing down climate change, about, you know, the way we live, reducing greenhouse gases, reducing CO2 emissions. And we kind of went into it, but the term that they're using is geoengineering. So it's, can geoengineering be used to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere or otherwise reverse global warming?
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying the word that they use for it is geoengineering. So you know, when you read the report or when you see the term geoengineering, that's something that they're using to, Just the fancy word that they're using to what we already been talked about is cleaning up the atmosphere, cleaning up the environment. So,
yeah.
You know, they're trying to be smart. It's geoengineering, man. You're cleaning up the environment, yeah. So, but I think we pretty much hit on all the important points from this report.
Yeah, and just to highlight to everybody what we were using the FAQ from the appendix to kind of just walk through, because these questions are questions that a lot of people have. So if you're curious about the other questions, you know, that'll be mentioned. That'll be in the thing. It's the FAQ section, so you can just go there and check it out. But the report itself, they have executive summaries that you can read of every chapter. There's 29 chapters, and the executive summaries are pretty adequate at summing up basically what's in the report. They also have PowerPoint presentations for each chapter that you can download. So if you just want to skim it, that's a great way to skim it quickly. And if you want to dig down into the report, because the report itself is over 1,000 pages, there are links to dig down into the report. But even if you just skim the executive summaries, you'll come away with a wealth of knowledge and information.
So, no. I mean, like Pat and I was talking earlier before the show started, I knew about some of these environmental things. And a lot of this stuff that we read isn't new. It just kind of solidified a lot of things and made more things a lot clearer for me as I read through the questions. So this report is great. Go back and listen to the last two episodes of Lessons from the Screen as he's breaking this report down, because he didn't break down the frequently asked questions in the report. I mean, in his show. So it's other things that he talked about within the show that help you really understand and get a global grasp, because The what we want to do with this show and his show is kind of connect the two topics. He go a little further, deep down into it on his show, and we kind of give it to you in the lamest terms and make it, you know, understandable the way we do it as a whole, as two hosts. together. So he do it how he do it on his show. We do it how we do it over here. But it's all to get us to pay more attention to the climate. I'm gonna work on getting us an interview. Gentleman that I know works well with the environment, Dr. Bruce Strobel. So we're gonna work on getting Dr. Bruce Strobel on to kind of get his view and assessment on, you know, the climate, that the climate, these ecological systems, and different things that we can do on our end to help improve the environment, because that's the things that we need to be looking at. Whether you live in the projects or you live in the hills, right? We need to be making sure that we understand that when America gets the cold, Black America gets the flu. So no matter what, if you're Black or you're poor, the effects for you are going to be 10 times worse. So, which means we need to work 10 times harder to make sure that we don't get those negative effects on that level. And if we don't, you can do all the praying and all the other stuff you want to do. But God's like, hey, man, they told y'all. They've been telling y'all. You've been ignoring it. And I understand that our day-to-day lives they take precedent, our day-to-day lives, but you have to understand how this will affect your day-to-day life. Like I said earlier, imagine you not being able to breathe the air outside, and then you being too poor to buy air to breathe. So you have to think about that. Or even on a more local level, like let's say, or on a more realistic level to you, even though all of this is real, just an analogy. If you live in the housing projects and they're talking about tearing down your projects and y'all ignoring that, and the next thing you know, one day you wake up with a note on your door saying you got to get out. So don't let that note, don't let that environmental note per se to be put on our doors, because we aren't paying attention to what's going on. The next thing we know, water levels rising, the water's acidic, the earth is hotter, CO2 levels have expanded. Greenhouse gases have expanded, and our living condition is just fucked up. We can't eat. And then one more thing, too. I talked about, and when it goes to geoengineering, they talked about introducing genetically modified plants and foods and things to help us survive. And, you know, we already have companies like Monsanto and all that already on board with that, and we already know about these seed storages throughout the world. Like different places in the world have seed storages of true seeds, and then you have companies like Monsanto and others who have these genetically modified plants and foods and things that we already know cause cancer because of the way they're put together. They're put together to make money. So you give organizations like that a leg up in the game to really hurt things. So we have to really be looking at this as a whole and not just saying it doesn't affect me. Just like anything else, like when, you know, how somebody becomes an advocate for cancer after a loved one either gets affected by cancer or dies from cancer, don't wait till that happens to you to become an advocate. Become an advocate now. Become an activist now. Let's do what we can to make sure we clean up our environment, our immediate environments, and then our environment as a whole. That way we can make sure that at least we did everything we need to do and we survived. You heard me? Got any closing remarks, my brother?
Power to the people.
Power to the people. Hey, man, wake up, clean up, stand up. Two fingers in the air. 'Cause we out of here.